The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Midway through Thursday night's first qualifying final, a state of the game debate threatened to erupt and disrupt the AFL final series. 14 quarters later, and many believe it was the best start to a final series in AFL history. Two games decided by 3 points or less, and all four games decided by less than three goals. But while there was an overarching winner in football and the top two advanced to preliminary finals, there were some big losers to emerge from the weekend. So we'll touch on what it all means, plus dissect all the latest AFL trade whispers, or lack thereof, in the latest socially distant edition of the Fox Footy podcast. Ben Waterworth with you, as his new Chick Appliances ambassador, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxie.
Yes, it came with a Brisbane Lions sticker, Benny, my new fridge. I was very excited about the weekend, clearly.
It's an omen. And live from the Sunshine State is Chief Damien Hardwick Agitator, Todd Boss.
Hello, Ben. Hello, Max. Congratulations on your new fridge. Maxie, could I ask you, what elements did you place as a high priority in shopping for a new fridge?
It's silver.
Yep.
But also we went for the bottom freezer section, really splashed out, which is more expensive choice than a top freezer situation. I felt like a real adult picking not the minimum cheapest option. It's like when I moved out for the first time and went and bought all my appliances from Kmart. It's like, okay, well, the Kmart coffee pod machine is going to be fine for about a week, and then I'm going to never use it again anyway. So let's actually use money well.
You know, Maxie, that you are a genuine adult when you are somewhat excited, and certainly your day revolves around a fridge delivery.
Oh, yes. I woke up, got the text, it's coming in this window. All right, I've got to be ready, got to get everything out. Oh, what a day.
And have you loaded the fridge up yet, Max?
Yes, get everything back in there, got everything nice and safe. It's on. This is much too much talk about my fridge.
No, but I've got one more question. Did you go shopping specifically for more cold stuff so that you could load the fridge up initially?
No, but again, like a real adult, I put lots of the cans of Coke that we have, Coke no sugar, of course, in there to load it up and make sure it's more efficient when it's full, as we know with fridges.
Have you got a fridge in your Taj Mahal apartment there, Tom? Oh.
I am on the 23rd floor, as I've told you the last couple of weeks. Jordan. Yeah, we've got a fridge. The freezer's at the top, but unfortunately, it doesn't produce water or ice, as I like fridges to do. It's not the creme de la creme of fridges. But and you know what? Funny you say, last night was frustrating because it was actually making a noise and I had to get up in the middle of the night to open it and shut it because it was making this bleeping noise. So there's been a bit of fridge drama in our podcast over the last 24 hours.
Now, you just mentioned ice just then before, Tom. Speaking of ice, it was a bit icy in the press conference after the game. Brisbane defeated Richmond and Damien Hardwick was being questioned about a lack of discipline, which was a very big talking point on the shows last night across the Fox Footy channels. What was it like inside that press conference after what was a thrilling qualifying final?
Well, it was tense. I mean, the background to this is halftime Damien Hardwick did an interview in which he labelled the umpires trigger happy. Trigger happy, that's fine. And I thought, after the game, I'm going to bring it up. Because he's the one who said it. Like, he brought it up. He said the words trigger happy. You know, I would have had no reason to bring up the umpiring if he'd not said trigger happy. Anyway, he brought it up. And he gave a bit more. He said, you know, let the boys play, or a phrase similar to that. You know, in finals, let them go. And then I thought, well, this is going to be a story now. Because he's talking about it's the discipline, it's the umpiring. He's a bit of a hothead sometimes, Damien Hardwick, which is part of the reason he's such an attractive media personality, because he sort of says what he thinks, sometimes gets him into trouble, as we saw with John Longmire earlier this year. So I asked him again, and he just said, no more. I think he knew he was getting himself into trouble, and that's fine. But I went back and I literally Googled Damien Hardwick umpire. Yes. And I got some quotes from 2013 in which he'd said, he'd made it very clear that it's not about letting the game go. It's about paying the free kicks that are there. And I thought, oh, I'll be a bit cheeky here and I'll do a tweet and I'll compare the two quotes. So the quote from 2013 was, I can't remember the exact wording, but it was, you know, pay the free kicks that are there, blow the whistle if you need to. And the 2020 quote the other night was, let the boys play, don't be involved in the game too much. Mm. So sort of two diametrically opposed philosophies from the same person, admittedly a long time apart. And it was the time between the two quotes that got me into some trouble. People said, oh, 7 years ago, he was allowed to change his mind. I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that's fair enough. He can change his mind. But very few people change their mind on how the game should be umpired. So he's really having a whinge the other night. And I think we just tried to delve a little bit deeper into it and didn't want too much of it. So I was more than happy with the way it played out. But it was tense. It was.
And I suppose when you look at it, Maxie, and I think Gary Lyon and Nick Riewoldt made a really good point on the couch last night talking about how when Richmond are winning, these ill-discipline issues, which have probably sort of been lurking amongst the Tigers on the field during this winning stage. When they are winning, it sort of masks that issue. But when it is on the big stage and they actually directly lead to a couple of goals and a really important goal, the Lachie Neale goal just before halftime after the double 50-metre penalty, it really exacerbates the issue. This is the reason why we're now talking about whether the Tigers have a discipline problem.
Yeah, and this has popped up this season before. I think it might have been the Port Adelaide game where they had a few 50-metre penalties that were really costly. The Trent Cotchin saying that changing nappies was the penalty for such. I remember that popping up in the news cycle. And to be fair to Hardwick, this is one of these situations where people's opinions can change, but also you don't have a firm view one way or the other, and it depends on which side of the coin you're on.
Yeah.
As a fan, I might say, oh, no, that's not a free kick, but I will say it's a free kick if it's my club. And he's very emotionally invested. So you can understand changing viewpoints. But those were his words. He put them out there. And the fact that he made the comments about the umpires certainly is noteworthy, and it certainly was worth discussing and delving into during the post-game coverage.
It's like the thing is, Ben, like you can go to a post-game press conference and you can ask Dorothy Dix the questions. Oh, what about this guy? How did this guy play? Or you can actually delve into the news of the day and the issues of the day. And I think you've got to delve into the news and the issues as much as possible. And if it means that the coach gets a bit frustrated, well, so be it. You know, like, he's the one who said trigger happy at halftime. So it's absolutely incumbent on the media to ask the question beyond that.
Particularly in the finals, you know, if we're talking about a North Melbourne presser in round 21 when they've got three wins, you know, you can ask about, all right, how's this young player looking? That's exactly what people wanted to see from those Kangaroos presses, because at that point the only people watching were the diehard Roos fans. But when you're in the finals and Richmond, the flag favourite, has been forced into a first semi-final since 2001, there are bigger stories than just how certain players went.
From a perspective of watching the game, Tom, on Friday night, you're at the Gabba and it was would have been an awesome atmosphere, I
Not
imagine.
Jealous.
What was it like?
Oh, my God. The Gabba atmosphere on Friday night, I'm talking about the game that was the Brisbane-Richmond game, was as good a football atmosphere as I can remember. And that's including MCG games, Adelaide Oval I've been to. It was rocking the Gabba, and it was half full. It was amazing. And you know what else I've really got in touch with or got to know? I really like Brisbane Lions fans. They're a bit soft is the wrong word, but they're not quite as hard-edged as other fans. And they just enjoy the game. And they're not really there they're emotionally invested without, I guess, being at the expense of everyone else, which is what most other fans are because they're so passionate. Collingwood, Carlton, Essendon, Richmond fans, it is their lives. I feel like, and this is generalising, Brisbane fans walking into the ground, they're happy. You know, they're fine. I'll go Lions, but if we don't win, you know, it's still great we're here and we got next week. I can't imagine fans from other clubs saying that. So I've really got in touch with the Lions fan base, and I'm almost a Brisbane
Man
supporter after the weekend. And the people. I just think the atmosphere was absolutely awesome and probably made better by the fact that I hadn't been in a game all year with a crowd like that as well. So it was sort of amplified by the distinction from empty stadiums, which is what we've seen for so long.
I wonder if it's sort of like being a Melbourne Storm fan in Melbourne, where, I mean, the Brisbane fans haven't had quite as much success over the last decade, obviously, but they had that success earlier this century, at least. And they don't have the inflamed rivalries where you're going into work and it matters so much whether your team won versus the other team lost. That could be a factor in that. To be fair, Tom, you said you've gotten in touch with the Brisbane fans, but have you also not been accused of being a fan of another club at another final this weekend?
Who's that?
Were you not accused of being a Bulldogs fan?
Oh, yes. I was walking into the Dogs Saints game, and a Saints supporter sprayed me. I think he was quite serious. He said, what was his exact words? He said, Tommy Morris. I said, yeah, g'day, how you going? He's wearing a Saints scarf and a beanie. No, he's not wearing a beanie. He's wearing one of those hats with like the Saints dreadlocks almost down in front of his face.
Ooh.
And I said, g'day, how you going? And he goes, try not to be so biased towards your Bulldogs today.
went, your Bulldogs?
I said, oh, okay, no worries. And I just walked away shaking my head, thinking that is bizarre. I used to actually work for the Saints a few years ago, and I've never been biased towards the Bulldogs in my life. I mean, the reality is if you write one slightly negative article about a club, everyone thinks you hate that club and you've got a vendetta against that club. Like, Richmond supporters are the best at it. I've got no issue with Richmond. I got a private Twitter message from a Richmond supporter saying, can you tell everyone at Fox Footy to stop the really obvious vendetta against the Tigers? You know, we've done nothing wrong. We don't deserve it. I think to myself, yeah. I mean, maybe I'm living in a fantasy world, but I don't see an obvious vendetta against Richmond. I think people just call it as they see it.
I think I don't know how you feel, Maxie, but undoubtedly amongst Tigers fans at the moment, the us against them nature of I suppose the news at the moment surrounding Richmond has never been stronger. It's always been a bit of an us against them kind of mentality for Richmond, but probably now more than ever it's stronger. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's not just from there has been a lot of media attention around the Tigers, and there have been a lot of negative stories around the Tigers this year. A lot of that is self-inflicted. They've had players misbehaving and breaches and things like that, but also, that's the price of success. I think if you look at I looked at the comments after the Saints win over the Dogs on our Facebook post. You post the final score and Saints fans are happy. And a lot of the responses were, yeah, go on, I'm not a Saints fan, but go beat the Tigers. They're my most hated club now. I think this happens when you threaten to become a dynasty, you become disliked. It's like the New England Patriots in the NFL were a laughing stock for decades, and now they're the most hated team in the land because they just keep winning. It's what happens when you have success.
Yeah, it's a far cry from how the Tigers were viewed in 2017 when they were where they were certainly the love child of the competition, and everyone was so happy to see them finally get some success. It is quite
get some what, Betty?
get some success.
Not in January. Not in January.
Oh, that's good from you, Maxie. What about Brisbane and Port Adelaide are now into the preliminary finals, and Is it made up now? Is it put on a, not necessarily a red carpet, but is the venture towards a grand final for these two teams after finishing first and second at the end of the home and away season, is it perfectly set up now, Tommy, for these two teams to potentially play off in their first grand final meeting since 2004?
Since Alistair Lynch and Darryl Wakelin went toe-to-toe. Yes. You can imagine that if that happened, there would be I'd be calling Darryl Wakelin and Alistair Lynch and trying to get some sort of reunion of some sort. But oh, it's all set up for them beautifully. I think, and Max, I'm interested in your thoughts. I think it's going to be harder for Port Adelaide because they're likely going to have to face Richmond at the Adelaide Oval, which to me is probably a 50-50 game. Whereas I think the Lions, I mean, it's just it's on a platter for them now, isn't it? The fact that Richmond the fact that they beat Richmond means they don't have to face them again to the grand final, and that they'll have Collingwood and Geelong at the Gabba. And I don't know. Like, I think they'd be favourite for a strong favourite for that game. So I'm more interested in that other prelim, the Port Richmond one, Maxie. I think that's going to be an absolute ripper if it does get to that.
Yes, that was the game of the year so far. I think that game at the Adelaide Oval. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And if St Kilda wins the semi, then we get a rematch of that game, which was fantastic, and the Saints won. So that would be fascinating as well.
And if Geelong and St Kilda do win this weekend, Maxie, there'd be eerie similarities to the 2004 prelim finals.
It would be identical. It wouldn't be identical because Brisbane hosted Geelong at the MCG in 2004, if you'll remember, because of the rules around MCG needing to host a certain number of finals. But Port Adelaide did host St Kilda, and Fraser Gehrig, is that the night he kicked 100 and everyone ran on, and then it sort of ruined the momentum of the Saints and the Power went on to win the flag, of course. So, yeah, we could get an exact repeat of that, which would be fun for history buffs.
Was this really the best week, first week of finals we've seen?
It was the closest based on margins, and yes, shorter quarters, but the closest based on margins since 1990. You could say 1994 because there was a game, I think it was it a West Coast Collingwood draw, then they had the extra time that year.
Yep.
So if you're going by four-quarter length, that was a slightly smaller margins, and 1994 is widely perceived to be the best first week of finals by most people. So the fact that we're comparing it to that is fantastic. So incredible stuff. In 1990, the fact that we're comparing this to then, that had two games in week one and this had four. So it's
Can I ask, does the fact that it was such a good week of finals, does that justify the week off before?
Ooh. I mean, we've had a week off and four okay finals. So I don't want to single-handedly say it. Like it, we knew that the benefit of the week off was that teams get their players back. And to be fair, West Coast were probably the biggest beneficiary of getting players back and then lost. Mm. So it's not as if it necessarily helps teams be better. I think it means that teams generally are going to be better placed, but then we have the impact and the flow-on effects going forward. The one thing that really came to me out of this whole weekend, I think we talked about this last week, out of the top four, Benny, you probably asked, which team do you think is least likely to win the flag? And I said Brisbane, because they have to play Richmond.
Yeah.
And the thing is now, I think Brisbane is the most likely to win the flag because they've beaten Richmond.
Yeah.
And they've got two Gabba home games coming if they win the prelim and then the grand final. They're incredibly well-placed and they should be the favourites in that prelim. It's how quickly these things turn. And those games were close tips. I think most people tip Richmond and quite a few people tip Geelong, even if they weren't the betting favourite. But that's how quickly these things can turn around. It's crazy how it works.
Most people will be tipping. There will be very few tipsters this weekend, Tommy, will be tipping St Kilda to knock over Richmond. But what does this elimination final victory over the Bulldogs mean for St Kilda? I think a lot of people thought just getting to the finals. Once St Kilda assured themselves of a final spot, that was definitely not just a pass mark, but going over the expectations that many people had. Now that they've actually won a final and they get to have a crack at Richmond, and it probably really does genuinely feel like now that they've got nothing to lose from now. Yeah. How much does this mean for the St Kilda Footy Club?
It's unbelievable for them to have an experience of winning a final. I think it was it Jordan Lewis who said it, maybe, that the experience of winning a final in 2007 had a huge benefit for the Hawks in 2008 when they went on and had an unlikely premiership win over your club, Geelong, Max and Ben. So I think it's beneficial for the future, but it also gives them a chance. Like, I don't think they're going to beat the Tigers, but geez, when you have a free shot at it, as this seems to be, and it's almost like, well, let's throw caution to the wind. Let's see what we can do. Then that playing with that freedom is something that, and freedom and confidence is something that you can't manufacture. You know, it has to be organic. You have to feel it inside of you. And the Saints have it at the moment. I agree with what Jared Waitley said on 360, that the fourth quarter was actually a con. Like, the game was won in the second and third quarter against the Dogs. And the Saints were so good in that period. They were clean. They were quick. Their tall forwards were awesome with King and Marshall and Paddy Ryder, who won't play, unfortunately. So it's all set up for them if they're good enough. I don't think they are, but it does a lot for them going forward at the very least.
It's really, really concerning, Tom, that at 10 past 10 on a Tuesday morning, the cops are already out.
Well, it's actually, it's 10 past 10 my time, 10 past 11 your time.
Yes.
Are they cops or an ambulance of some sort? No, that's an ambulance actually down there, so hopefully everyone's okay. I will say this, in Broadbeach, there's a fair bit happening. There's car crashes, there's robberies and shops. Like, I'm glad I'm on the 23rd floor, I'll tell you that. I'm away from all the mischief.
And of course, lots of kebab purchases at
that's Surface Paradise. Well. Paradise.
Oh, very different.
Potato, potato.
Yeah.
Before we get into fair or fast, just a couple of there's not a lot of trade whisper kind of updates hanging around. We're talking about this off air beforehand, Tommy, because we kind of just seem to be in a bit of a holding pattern at the moment. I assume West Coast and the Western Bulldogs, after their elimination final exits, will announce some list changes in the next couple of days. But in terms of movement and players being linked with other clubs or players making decisions about where they want to be in 2021, there hasn't been a lot of decisions made official because a lot of clubs are still in the lurk about what 2021 looks like.
Yeah, it's a really interesting position for the trade period at the moment, because we still don't know list sizes or salary cap. So what's happened over the last week is you have a situation where all the sort of the movement for the, let's say, the mid-range or the fringe players has sort of been done. Like, everyone sort of expressed their interest, they've had discussions, and they're ongoing. But there's really been no more movement because no one knows the details for next year. So I think the two main ones you need to look at are Jeremy Cameron and Joe Danaher, because they'll shift the dial. If both of those players leave Essendon and GWS respectively, then that just creates a smorgasbord of moves. Then where does Ben Brown go, or Tom McDonald, and where does Paddy McCartan go? There's so many different moves. Jesse Hogan, even from Fremantle. There's a huge domino effect that could fall into place. If Danaher stays, which I think is unlikely, and if Cameron stays, which I still think is a chance, then there's probably not going to be as much excitement as what we've had in previous years. But we're waiting on those two big moves. They're like the first two dominoes to fall. And when they do fall, and if they fall, then we'll know a lot more. But yeah, you're right. It has quietened down a bit over the last week or so.
Can we just, look, I know it's difficult. You're creating how much many millions people are going to be paid for years to come. But it is utterly ridiculous that it's October 6th and you don't know how many people are going to be on your list for next year. Teams have delisted players. Some teams haven't. It is crazy that we've gotten to this point where they don't know what to do. Yeah. And the trade period is, well, it's no one's fault, but it's everyone's fault.
Yeah.
I know it must be difficult, and I know there's a reason why you want to get it right and you can't make mistakes with these things, but it's still crazy that we're this close to the trade period and they don't know. Like, it's so, so hard to operate when you're a club in that situation.
Yeah, it's brutal for the clubs. And in the end...
And for the players.
And the players. Yeah, the players being made to wait. But, like...
Why are they being made to wait, Tom? Do you know? Is the AFL looking for more clarity from a certain party? Or do they want to get the finals out of the way?
It's not the latter. It's the Players Association and the AFL negotiating about what list sizes and salary caps going to look like next year. And they go together. It's not like you can announce list sizes without announcing salary cap.
Yeah.
So there's a few schools of thought. You know, you could have 35 players on a list, and the very best players, as Lee Montagna and Jordan Lewis have said before, get paid more in a model which would, you know, promote the superstars and probably, you know, it would absolutely lessen the importance of sort of mid-range players. That'd be underpaid. Or there's a model which is what the four northern clubs, the Lions, the Suns, the Swans and the Giants really want, where you'd have still 45 players on a list, maybe even a little bit more. And it would be more of a socialist model, Max, as we like to say.
Oh, yes.
And more even across the board. So there'd be very few players getting paid more than sort of $900,000 or $1 million. And the reason why these four clubs want that is because they want to have a reserves team that's full strength. So to give you an example, if you were Collingwood playing in the VFL and... the Eastern Seaboard Reserves competition, and you wanted to, and you were short on numbers, and you needed to bring someone in, you could call up someone from the Uni Blacks, or call up someone from, I don't know, name a good Eastern Footy League or a Northern Footy League club.
None of Wadding,
and they would pretty much slot straight into the VFL, and they'd be able to play a role. They wouldn't embarrass themselves. But if you're the Suns, and you have to call up someone from Bond University, or if you're the Sydney Swans, you've got to call up someone from the amateur competition in Sydney, it's clearly a lot weaker. And if you've got to call up three or four of them, then it significantly affects how your reserve team plays. So therefore, they want to have full control over who's in their reserves team and who's on their list, which is a slightly different prerogative to the Victorian clubs, who probably want to be able to attract the best players and pay the best players more. So you can see that it's quite a complex issue that the AFL and the Players Association are grappling with now. And I guess in a very bland way and a very blunt way, player contracts last till October 31. So the PA and the AFL are going, well, you know what, like, we want to get it done soon, but, you know, the players are still contracted, so we're not going to rush it through and do it badly if we don't absolutely need to. And that's the discussion that's happening at the moment.
And keep in mind that almost half the comp, 8 teams out of 18, used at least 38 players this season. In a shortened season. So that's it. The idea of having 35, you're cutting players who are literally playing AFL games. You're not cutting from the bottom of the list at that point. That's how deep that cut would be.
How much would that the more players used. I don't know if that's more than average. It feels like it's more than average, Maxi. But how much of an influence of not having state league competitions going has that had an impact on more players being used this year?
I have to imagine it's had a reasonable impact. A lot of it because you can't audition for your spot in the team. You know, if having these scratch matches, we had one on the weekend where there's three teams playing in one game and Justin Westhoff's a Tiger all of a sudden. We've had that all year. It's very weird situations, but you have to do that because otherwise you're not getting any practice. And you can understand why players on the fringes would be frustrated. And this isn't just bad teams necessarily stretching out. You know, a lot of teams, I think the Bulldogs used 40 players this season. And they made the finals. It's not as if it's only the bottom half of the comp that's trialing every player on their list to see who they want to play next year. It's quality players who are in this situation. And you need to have an evenness in the seconds, because if you can't trial strategies, if you can't have an entire club model when you're one of those northern clubs and you need to run a Eastern Seaboard team, if you're Brisbane and you're trying to send a team down to Victoria every second week to play a VFL game, you can't be sending someone who's nowhere near that level, because your team, your players are just going to be screwed.
That's right. And the other thing, Ben, is there's a fundamental and deep-seated lack of trust from the Players Association towards the AFL. Yeah. And that is built over a long period of time. I'm not saying whether it's fair or unfair, but that exists. So when the Players Association asks the AFL for figures and numbers, which allows them to negotiate in good faith, there's probably an element of, well, we don't feel like the AFL is giving us all the data, all the numbers that we need. So it's a very, very long process. Gil McLaughlin said on September 2, it'd be a couple of weeks away until we know list sizes, because the day before, Alistair Clarkson criticised the AFL for not coming out and telling us. That was September 2, more than a month ago, and we're still probably no closer.
Just one specific one, I suppose, I wanted to sort of ask you about, Tommy, is Paddy McCartan, who is reportedly in excellent shape and has drawn the interest of almost a handful of clubs. Do you think it's realistic that he might be back on an AFL list in 2021?
It's realistic, but it takes a lot of work, because in the end, there's lots of boards that have to approve this. And I think it's a bit unfair if doctors, you know, highly credentialed doctors, and several of them give him the tick of approval, but clubs are a bit gun shy because there's a sense of uncertainty about concussion and the way it impacts people and the way it impacts the future health of people as well, not just their football. I think Paddy McCartan should be on a list next year. I read that story with interest because my understanding is that it's very preliminary interest, and it's not necessarily clubs saying to Paddy McCartan, we want to take you. It might just be Paddy McCartan saying, hey, what about me? Like, am I a chance via his management? And
right.
I wouldn't be reading too much into it yet. There's a long way to go. He's a long way back in the queue in terms of key forwards, as we know, with Danaher and Cameron and Brown and maybe even Tom McDonald and some others as well. I think if he's going to play anywhere next year, Geelong is the best fit, because you can sit behind Hawkins for a year or two. You can get some games. You can learn from him. Hawkins, game craft, probably the best of any key forward in the competition. And then you can take his spot if you're good enough. And he's from Geelong way, yep, and they're a strong club with a history of getting the best out of players. So I think of all the clubs, the Cats are the best suited to Paddy McCartan and make the most sense.
I completely understand from Paddy McCartan's perspective. This is his career. This is his best chance to make money with a career, because this is what he's good at. It's what he's spent all this time and put all this effort into. And he's done so much work to come back from his concussion symptoms. But it just scares me, the idea of him playing footy again. Like, the more and more we know about concussions and the detailed revelations he's given us about how difficult it has been for him because of his concussion, it scares me to think of him playing AFL footy again.
Yeah.
It's not even about having one more, because he's already gone so far having these injuries. These are brain injuries. Like, we say concussion, it's a brain injury. That's bad.
Yeah, it's bad. I agree. The other thing is, if he has one more concussion, you know, does that make it, is that meant to be significantly worse than what it would have been? And according to what I've read, and Peter Ryan wrote a good story in The Age a while ago, we interviewed him, one more concussion is no worse than what it would have been with his first concussion 5 or 6 years ago. But there absolutely is a sense of uncertainty. my view is, Max, that although I'm worried for him, if that's what he wants to do, he's in charge of his own destiny and he should be allowed to do that.
It's I suppose you have to argue it's like a UFC fighter. They're taking the risk because they're happy to get beaten up for the chance of success and athletic glory. And if that's what he wants to do, that's his decision. And as long as the legal liability situation is sorted out, because, I mean, lawsuits that are already happening around concussions are a big deal for the AFL. And if players that they know have had concussion histories and really bad injuries, and if they're ticking that off, they have to be certain that it's not going to come back to bite them.
That's right.
We're keeping a close eye on this story on foxfooty.com.au, so keep your eyes peeled to that. But now on the Fox Footy podcast, it's time for Australia's favourite segment, Fair or Farce.
Was that dangerous by Sebastian Vettel? Farce. 5 second time penalty.
All right, so we've got four Fair or Farces here today, and three of them are related to football. So I'll start with the three football ones.
I wonder which one I'll get.
You're not getting the foot. You're getting the non-football one, Max. you can probably guess what it's going to be about as well. Anyway, Ben, fair or fast? Ben Long should get off.
With the appeal. No, that's a farce. I think that the 1 week has worked well in this situation. So if he does get off, there'll be an absolute outcry, which is ridiculous because, you know, earlier in the season, it is just Michael Christian can be in a lose-lose. I've got some empathy for Michael Christian in terms of he can be in a real lose-lose situation sometimes because if he goes too hard, he gets whacked, and if he goes too soft, he gets whacked. I think he's found a nice balance here. I think and this was not taken into account Ben Long's history because it's an incident by incident basis. But he's been too aggressive a lot of the time. You know, coming off at the back of the square for the second centre bounce of the game and collecting Jack McRae high was not a good act. I know it's based on incident by incident, as I said, and the impact, you know, Jack McRae was able to get up pretty quickly and play the game on. But the actual act, the intent of the act itself is one that we don't want in the game. And I think Christian has taken that into account and giving him the 1 week, despite McRae getting up and playing out the rest of the game. So for mine, I think he's hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. I was in the tribunal hearing last night, and I completely agree with you, Benny. It's one of those situations where I always listen to the defence's arguments, and I find myself going, oh, you know, they're right. Maybe he should get off. You know, you think about it, it's not that bad. But then I step back for a moment, And the match review and the tribunal have done exactly what I always implored them to do. You have to judge based on the process, not the outcome. Jack McRae did not get injured, but the tribunal juror's response was they were surprised that Jack McRae got up as quickly as he did, because an action like that has the potential to go much, much worse.
Yep.
So you have to penalise the action, not the outcome. It's why we get so annoyed when there's a tackle one time and someone gets concussed and the player gets 1 or 2 weeks and the other times they don't. You have to be consistent. So as long as they're consistent with this and this action always gets a penalty, then it's totally fine.
Yep. Agree with you all there. Well done. Max, fair or farce? If Perth media did not stir up Collingwood with the Dirty Pies headline, West Coast would have won. Fair or farce?
Farce. Nathan Buckley was relatively strong on this on AFL 360 on Monday night, saying that it was people externally got more wound up than they did internally. I'm sure there's an element of we're backs against the wall because we're going to have to play a final in Perth against those fans and against those players, and it's a difficult situation. But and maybe the Dirty Pies thing got to them a little bit because that's specifically quite weird. But no, I think Collingwood knew what they had to come up against, and I think West Coast was a team that we have been overrating for a little while and played a bad game or a not too good game while Collingwood played one of their best games of the year. And they won by a point while kicking 12 goals for. Like, West Coast very easily could have won that game. Like, Josh Kennedy hit the post with a set shot. There were a number of chances they could have kicked any one of those and the margin flips. So, no, I don't think you can blame that for the loss. There are a number of other reasons.
Really interesting as well how the players spoke about it after the game specifically. You know, Scott Penderby was quite tongue-in-cheek in his immediate post-match interview with Channel 7, and then Mason Cox's on Fox Footy, and then how he tweeted about it after the game. Like, so it was kind of presented in as a bit of sort of tongue-in-cheek afterwards. Yeah. But Tommy, I know this is one of your bugbears. Don't tell me that the players don't read the media or that they at least don't talk about it amongst themselves.
They're normal people. Of course they do.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, of course they do. Like, the more I've got to know more players, the more I realise that they read everything about themselves. You know, from the time they're drafted in the phantom drafts to when they retire. You know, Gary Ablett doesn't, but he's in the minority. You know, most players would know most things. Even if they don't read the articles, they see the headlines or they get sent screenshots. You know, that's the digital age we speak to. As I watched Tampa Bay versus the New York Yankees, and that's out. Caught it deep, caught it center field.
Deep one leg?
caught it center field, not deep cover.
Let's not talk about baseball. I'm upset about the A's already.
Yeah, okay. Ben, one I've been wanting to ask you for a very, very long time. I know it's close to your heart, given a lot of the content you produce for the Fox Footy website.
About tromboning?
Fair or fast? Kane Corns needs to keep his opinions to himself.
Oh, wowee.
What?
It's a nice whack. No, fast. I think Kane, personally, my very personal opinion is I think Kane's quite refreshing. I don't, he calls it how he is. I think a lot of what gets missed a lot of the time is he's actually got a pretty good footy brain as well. He listens to in games. He reads the play really well, and he's not afraid to say what he thinks. It can rub people up the wrong way. And I suppose you're probably more directly referencing the fact that he thought that Collingwood was making up the numbers. Don't tell me that not everyone else, besides very diehard Pies fans, was thinking exactly the same thing. Because Collingwood, going into this final series, were clearly the eighth-ranked team out of all eight finalists. So
the funny thing was, it actually wasn't a lateral view. It was quite regular. No, I agree with you. What I like about Kane Corns is he's not the same as every other. Like, how boring would the media be if every single ex-player was the same? So he's willing to say what he thinks. Yeah. I don't agree with everything he says, but I do think he works hard and does his homework, and that's really important. He doesn't just come and just flippantly say things and go home and not watch footy. He watches everything.
And I think he draws a lot of attention because it is so different to what we're used to in the AFL media, but it's coming from a landscape in the US where people are much, much worse in terms of being shock jocks and outrage merchants and just saying things that are patently ridiculous to try and get attention. Kane Corns has some interesting views, but I don't think he is anywhere near as bad as some people say he is.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, people, tall poppy, we'd love to cut them down. And the last one for you, Max.
Oh, yeah.
Fair or fast?
I feel like this is going to be across the Atlantic in some way, shape, or form.
You know me so well. Donald J. Trump getting sick and recovering will help him in the election. Fair or fast?
Well, at least you've gone quite niche, so I can be just talking about the electoral element and not emotion. Fast. I think what we've seen so far is that the wider view of Donald Trump is that he did not take the necessary precautions and got sick because of it. And I think that a lot of people, particularly independents, are viewing COVID as the biggest thing in this election in the US and are not thrilled with his handling. That's what I'm reading in the polling. I'm a big reader of 538, seeing how things are going, how the Senate race is going. It's two-thirds to the Democrats at this point, Tom. It's all very exciting. So,
very interesting. And look,
I just want to say this, Tom. I would never, ever be happy about someone getting sick. Never, ever.
No, not at all. And never. I completely agree with that. So I'm sure he listens to the podcast and I hope he recovers, Donald J. Trump. I will say this, though. There is a link with the US election and the AFL this year, Ben. Are you aware of it?
You'll have to explain it to me, Tom, and the listeners.
On the first morning of the trade period, on the Wednesday, that will be when the US election is in full flight. So start dropping, the election will be, the 270 electoral college votes will be being counted. It's going to be a very big Wednesday.
And the problem is, of course, there are so many postal votes this time, Tom, that we might not know the winner on election night.
Which is, I want to see someone stand up there and claim it or concede. I want to know.
Yeah, that's... They're a democracy for now, Tom. Let's see what happens after November.
All I know, Ben, is that nothing will compete with Santos versus Arnie Vinnie.
Oh, Vinnie. That
was an election in good faith, you know. And you can eat ice cream down the bottom of the White House all you want. But in the end, Trump and Biden, they don't really like each other. Enough politics on the Fox Footy podcast.
And the debate between Santos and Vinnie was much, much more balanced and entertaining at the same time than Biden beat Trump. Yeah, just a quick one, Tom. You haven't taken a certain red-coloured cap up to the Sunshine State, had you?
No, I haven't. At home, I do have a Make America Great Again hat that I bought in the US in July 2016 when it was still a bit of a joke that Trump could potentially get elected, and it quickly became quite serious. So I've still got the hat, but I'm not flaunting it too much these days.
That's the best.
That's fair as well. Thank you, Tom, for a big edition of Fair or Fast. Maxi, the mailbag is quite full this week.
Yes, and we've got a few teams from the finals that we do need to cover. So thank you to everyone who tweeted in. We tweet out on Monday afternoons, usually, as long as I remember, asking for questions. And if you reply, you can get your questions answered, just like Rudy, our good friend, who asks, does Geelong's slow, methodical game plan simply not stand up to finals pressure? They seem to lose the exact same way every time, blown away in one quarter when the opposition turns the heat up. Ultimately, can one of the Cats fans on the show reassure me we won't go out in straight sets? Unfortunately, no, I cannot, Rick.
No. I think every Geelong fan, when it comes to finals time, turns very pessimistic straight away, and it is nigh on impossible to get out of that mindset that a straight sets exit does loom. Having said that, Geelong's got a pretty good recent semi-finals record. They have run into, obviously, Sydney in 2017, I think it was.
Yeah, I was sure they were going to lose that.
Yep, and Sydney was coming off a ridiculous winning streak, and they caught the Swans off guard, and then they were far too strong. They actually blew West Coast away in last year's semi-final with a big third quarter as well. So they sort of turned the tables there.
Can I ask just to both of you, what does it do for Chris Scott if they go out in straight sets?
It's not as if he's not under an enormous amount of pressure because of the record now. I mean, it gets worse, but it's like going from 9 to 10.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so it can't be that much worse, I feel. I don't know if you feel differently, Benny.
No, this is the thing. Like, can you really diss a coach that's taken he's missed finals just once since he's taken over the side?
No, you can't say he's doing a bad job.
Yeah.
But you could argue that he should have got more for his hard work.
Yes.
I would say yes to that. But what does it do? It's a reputation hit. Mainly, maybe a legacy hit in terms of that he wasn't able to claim a flag. If that's still the case, they're still right in this. But like I would think that I don't think they're going out in straight sets. I was going to say as well that they've got a good semi-finals record and they've run into teams that have hit the wall. And I just wonder if Collingwood might hit the wall. I just wonder if that was their grand final against West Coast last weekend, and it might be tough for them to get up.
I don't think so. For the Collingwood Football Club. I reckon they've got more to give. That doesn't mean they're going to win, but I don't think they're going to be pushovers against the Cats.
No, I agree with that.
I was going to say, Maxie, that the slow methodical game style at that point has... I don't think that's necessarily a finals hindrance for them. Like I know West Coast sort of played... it was successful for them back in 2018, but what West Coast was able to do really well during that finals series was get on top of their ground ball post-clearance. And that's important that the Cats are relentless when it comes to the coalface. And they were outdone by Port in the clearances on the weekend. And every time Port has won the clearances, they've won a game in 2020.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there. The Port game, that's a very even game. If you told me pre-game that Tom Hawkins were going to have 6 shots on goal and kick 0-5 with a miss, you know, it's crazy the thing. You would have thought he would have kicked at least one or two. And then the game's a lot closer. There was a couple of... Was it twice, like seconds before the siren, the Cats either played on or missed a chance where they could have had a goal? And in contrast, Brad Ebert kicked one after the siren. So these tiny margins all add up. And the problem with Chris Scott press conferences at this point, everyone sees what he has to say and they go, oh, you know, you're being ridiculous. But he's right. It's lazy to say that it's always the same thing with the Cats because there's always a problem. And he's doing the right thing. He's looking at the process. He's saying, okay, well, in this situation, in this game, we had these problems. And in this game, we had these problems. And every time it is explainable. But that's not an emotional response. That's a brain-led response. That's very rational. And people in the finals, when they keep losing and watching their team lose, are not rational. They're emotional. So you can understand why he gets the response he does when he tries to explain it and says things very logically at times. Yeah, it's frustrating for Cats fans, that's for sure.
Well done, Max. I agree with you. I agree with you for what it's worth, but I think Collingwood will win.
Yeah.
You think Collingwood will win?
Yeah, I do. I really do. Yeah. I think they're fantastic against West Coast. I think Geelong were good against Port, but I just really like Tagovailoa. I think Tagovailoa is the best player on the field.
The thing is, they kicked 12-4. you know, that's really good. And they still won by a point. And it's just, I'm not certain about Collingwood. I agree it's going to be close, but I think people are overrating them a little bit. And this always happens.
Joel Selwood, I think, will probably play, but he can't be 100% fit after having surgery a week before the games on his finger.
I would also like to imagine that the Cats won't have Tom Atkins and Luke Dalhouse in a centre bounce in crucial moments in the fourth.
Wasn't that Luke Dalhouse's first centre bounce for the year? Did I read that correctly?
Something like that. He'd been in very few at the very least.
Yeah.
It's not like he's a bad centre bounce player because he played a lot in the centre bounces when he was at the Bulldogs and has had a fair bit of time there over the years at Toronto. Yeah. But
that's the longest mailbag answer in the world, isn't it?
I'd be fascinated to see what they do at selection this week, Maxi, and whether they bring back Radicalea to give them another option in there, particularly with Collingwood going quite tall as well, and whether Collingwood sticks with Darcy Cameron again, who did some pretty good things against the Eagles and competed well against Nick Nat.
Yeah, Brody Grundy's a problem, but in not the way that we normally say that in the finals. Like, he's just not had a great year, and the fact that you're having to bench him in the second half of a do-or-die final is certainly surprising.
But good coaching.
Yes, it's a situation where Collingwood was the underdog and they had to play like they were the underdogs. And you have to praise Nathan Buckley for doing that and taking chances. That was the only way they were going to beat West Coast in the West. And so it was a fantastic coaching win by the Pies. Speaking of the ruck position, Positive Jake has a positive question. Do the Dogs need to take a leaf out of St Kilda's playbook and bring in a mature, experienced second ruckman to support Tim English? He suggests a now healthy Matt Cruiser fits the bill, who I believe is retired technically. So,
yeah, wow.
Surprise.
Matt Cruiser would be a big call, given that his injuries. But Luke Beveridge spoke about it after the game. I saw Ralphie spoke about it on AFL Tonight last night. You know, they clearly want help for Tim English. But as we spoke about before, the one mitigating factor for the Dogs is list sizes. They don't want to bring in another ruckman if list sizes are going to go down. It's going to hurt them in other areas. So they're waiting. But who's the best? I mean, Braden Pruce is available via trade, but
that's not really the right type of player. You want more like the ideal is like Todd Goldstein, but that seems unlikely.
Paddy Ryder, he's an all Australian quality ruckman. Like, I know he's a bit older now, and
he's really good this year.
But his best ruck work can match it with any ruckman in the competition.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who it is. So if you could bring in a Paddy Ryder, that'd be unbelievable. But Todd Goldstein would also be a good type. Tim English is good around the ground, but as we saw on the weekend, he just gets pushed around in the marking contest too much.
I do think English is going to work out for their timeline because the Dogs are going to be good for a while. The problem is that it is frustrating that they haven't been better the last couple of years when it feels like they should have been. So it's weird with them. We have a question about the Eagles from Miles, who asks, is the premiership window closed for West Coast, or in the words of Mark Duffield, does it just need a clean?
I don't think it's closed, Ben, do you?
No, I don't think it is. I think we talked about it, I think it might have been last week, or maybe in our trade period special podcast a couple of weeks ago, Tom, that of all the 18 clubs at the moment, West Coast seem to be the least talked about team in terms of trade news and whispers at the moment. There doesn't seem like there's going to be a lot of change to this Eagles outfit. So if that's the case, and there's not going to be a lot of movement there after they essentially moved the world to get Tim Kelly last year, there doesn't seem like there's going to be a lot of change there. And they believe in this core group of players. What might be more an issue rather than the list is actually the game plan, Maxi, which was spoken about on the couch last night. And Rudy mentioned beforehand about whether this Geelong game plan doesn't stack up in finals. Well, does the West Coast game plan, which is quite similar in terms of high kick mark, a little bit more slow, methodical, not as reliant on contested ball, even though Geelong are a much better contested ball side than the Eagles. That's something that's got to be addressed by Adam Simpson over the off-season.
Yeah, they're in this weird spot where what was great about the Eagles 2018 flag was that they maximised their assets. They knew what they had. They went against the grain. They played that kick mark game style and it worked for them. But they've done it another couple of times now, and the fact that they're widely considered a premiership contender the last 2 years but haven't even made the prelims either year says there is a bit there's something going wrong there. And their midfield hasn't been up to scratch for the last 2 years, even since adding Tim Kelly. They've had one good month as a midfield and with the ground ball game, and that was the finals in 2018. And since then, they've been below par. They've been not a top four worthy team.
And Adam Simpson mentioned it in his press conference after the game on Saturday, that those three losses at the restart of the season against Brisbane, Gold Coast and Port Adelaide, where they lost by 6 goals or more every time, was really costly. Because in a shortened season where percentage is probably more important than ever, they were three big hits to their percentage, and ultimately it cost them in missing out the top four this year after missing out in percentage last year in terms of making that top four. So, you know, hindsight's beautiful, but if they'd won at least one more of them, or maybe even been more competitive in those three games, they might have found themselves in a very different situation this time.
Yeah, it's hard. They're also not going to be very active in the trade period because they were active last year. They spent so many assets getting Tim Kelly in. They don't have the high picks in this year's draft, so it's not like they have the assets to trade out again. So they've gone for a flag and they're doing the right thing. They just need to sort of retool and figure out how to go again. And if it goes bad, then that's just the way it crumbles sometimes when you try and win a premiership. Mm. One from Costas. I've done a bit of research into the background of this one because I like it quite a bit. It's about the draft. He asks, which team's 2017 draft crop has been and will be the best? Here's some nominations, then I'll read out the options to you. So he has Brisbane with Rayner, Bailey and Stasevic, Fremantle with Chera and Brayshaw, or St Kilda with Caulfield and Clark.
Oh,
and now let me list some other options for you. We have Collingwood, Jaden Stevenson, Tyler Brown and Brodie Mychek as a rookie. Geelong, Tim Kelly, Charlie Constable and Grian Myers. GWS did all right getting Brett Daniels and Sam Taylor and Zach Langdon, and even Aiden Bonner turned into a pick in the end. Charlie Spargo and Bailey Fritch for Melbourne, Richmond, Jack Higgins, Bolter and Liam Baker. There's so many. Now Aaron Norton and Red Richards for the Dogs. There's so many good options here. I don't know which one you guys are.
I like the Dogs and the Tigers, what you just said there.
The Tigers doing pick 17 and pick 25 and a rookie pick into Higgins, Bolter and Liam Baker is not bad at all.
It's seriously good. Yeah, I mean, probably slightly biased because they're premiership players.
Does help.
But I think that's pretty good. What was the Brisbane one? Rayner and who?
Zach Bailey at 16 and Brandon Stasevic at 18. So they were high picks, keep in mind, and you have to compare these things are never even because of where you're taking these players.
The other two teams as well, so Fremantle and St Kilda with Caulfield and Clark and Chera and Brayshaw respectively, as well as the Lions, they would probably have been the players that have, as a group, have maybe played the most amount of games and got that continuity of the group, you know, in terms of Norton and Richards would be right up there as well. Jack Higgins has obviously missed some footy. In terms of, I think probably the debate really should be who will be the best crop out of all those. And I think you'd probably have to say that the potential of Norton, and I think Ed Richards probably as a player too, is pretty exciting from a Bulldogs perspective. But Chera and Brayshaw, if it really gets going for those two, it's going to be darn exciting. And I think we saw Nick Caulfield really stand up on the weekend, and Hunter Clark is one of the more watchable players, I think, in the competition. Yeah, so for mine, it's probably the Saints or Fremantle in terms of who will be the best crop of the lot.
And the Saints also picked up Ben Paton at 46 in that draft.
Your man, Tom.
Ben Paton, yeah, hasn't re-signed yet, but negotiations are ongoing. Saints fans love him. I think before the weekend, there was a stat that from his previous 450 football, he'd conceded just one goal on an opponent. So he's not easy to kick goals on, Ben Paton, as a small defender.
Very interesting. Fremantle, by the way, at the end of Fremantle's draft, Mitch Croden and Bailey Banfield as a rookie. Very valuable picks.
Yeah, and Croden's sort of worked his way into the best 22 more consistently towards the back end of the year.
Yep. Finally, Omar just wants to know, Tom, any new news on Adam Saad? What's his status?
Omar? His status is he's out of contract. He's still making up his mind.
Is he one of the ones that's going to be waiting for everything to get sorted out, or is this more about his decision?
It's more about his decision and the direction of the club he either goes to or stays at. I can't say whether he's leaning one way or the other, but the fact that he hasn't re-signed yet is probably ominous news for the Bombers. There was a rumour last week or a news story that Mark Lagudashay had offered Adam Saad a car.
Yes, I saw that.
Huh.
Which that was categorically denied by Carlton and also Saad's management, who told me that I could say it's categorically denied by those two parties. But it's an interesting one. I think that he's just waiting on to see what Essendon are doing with the direction of their club. I mean, they've offered him, a 4 or 5 year deal now, so it's not like a lack of security. He just wants to play in a successful team. So it would be a huge blow for Essendon if he leaves, but it's an even bigger blow if he leaves to Carlton, because it's not like Carlton are 10 teams above Essendon on the ladder. I think Carlton are a bit more promising, but they're not that dissimilar from the Bombers. So it's going to be an interesting one, but no real immediate update at the time of podcast recording. That could change by the time you're listening to this.
That's true. The thing with Carlton you've got to keep in mind is that they have improved, but they've done so because as soon as Teague came in, they started playing the veterans over prioritising youth. So they have tried to maximise their wins right now. So finishing one half win ahead of the Bombers on the ladder makes them look maybe a little bit better than their actual progress would suggest. But I digress. That's the mailbag for this week, Benny.
A strong edition of the mailbag. So two games left, two sudden death games. It's all do or die now for the remaining, five games of this AFL season. Yes. So the stakes are big, and which also means the cups are pretty big. So we start with St Kilda and Richmond, Tom, of course, for the Dean Polo Cup.
Dean Polo, very good. Yeah, I'm tipping Richmond in this one. I think Richmond will win fairly comfortably in the end. Mainly because I think Richmond were actually pretty reasonable against the Lions, just like Geelong were pretty reasonable against Port. The Saints have, it is a free hit, but it would be a huge upset if they won, and I think the Tigers will win.
Yeah, and I think the comparison that people have been making to the 03 Lions and 2015 Hawks, it's not a three-peat they're going for, but it's 3-4, which is pretty damn close. For a dynasty, I think that's a fair enough comparison. I don't mind that at all. I would still, if I had to tip right now, I'd be tipping a Richmond Brisbane grand final. So I will be tipping the Tigers to win, therefore. That makes sense.
Biased Eastern Seaboard media against
Brisbane. I know.
Yeah. Oh. And then, of course, we kind of already know who Tom's tipping between Geelong and Collingwood, of course, for the Carl Steinfurt Cup.
Yeah, oh, Collingwood for me, Max. What about you?
With less Kendall than Hardy, zero. Max. Less than zero confidence I'll be tipping Geelong.
Less than zero.
I thought Richmond and Geelong were the two best teams. So I looked a bit silly on the weekend, but I think a lot of people got zero or one tips on the weekend. And then there's every chance that those teams will still go in the prelims. And, you know, Geelong-Brisbane, if you'd said that game going into last week, if that was the qualifying final, that would have been 50-50, sort of like Port Adelaide-Geelong was. You know, that's a pretty even game. That's a winnable game for the Cats. So the other thing you have to keep in mind is the form of qualifying final losers in semifinals. And I've looked all this up. And under the current top eight format, qualifying final losers win 80% of the semifinals. However, in the last 5 years, they're 6-4. So there is a bit of a trend of these teams from elimination finals coming up and winning games when some people are expecting it, but history would suggest they wouldn't. So I don't know if that's to do with the pre-finals bye. I don't know if it's just a small sample size, but there are teams coming through and winning, so it's not impossible. Certainly not as impossible as it was in the earlier part of this century.
Gee, if Collingwood gets up on Saturday, it's going to be pandemonium in Melbourne, even though they won't be able to celebrate live at the game. But
almost.
Imagine if this game is at the MCG this Saturday night, Geelong and Collingwood.
Imagine this weekend at the MCG.
Yeah,
Richmond St Kilda too.
Four Victorian clubs playing finals in Queensland. That's the times that we're in, but we love it. And we're thank God footy's humming up in the Northern State, which is where Tom Morris has been for this podcast. And we're signing off now. And make sure to keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.